and welcome to the Roundhouse Podcast with Paul Sollentrop of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We're going to talk Wichita State softball today with Lauren Mills. Lauren is a senior on the Shocker softball team. She is from Topeka. She's hitting 376 with 9 home runs and 42 RBIs. She leads the Shockers with 36 walks and an on-base percentage of 511, which is second on the team, second in the American Athletic Conference. She leads the American Athletic Conference with an average of 0.71 walks a game. Lauren is a multiple-time selection on the conference all-academic team. She earned all-conference honors in 2022, in addition to all-conference tournament honors in 2022 and 2021. So the Shockers, they wrapped up the regular season last night at Kansas. They are ranked in the top 20 of the four major polls, peaking at number 18 in the NFCA poll. 43-9, regular season champions. Their next action is May 12th in the conference tournament in Tampa. So Lauren, give us a big picture view of this season. What's made this group special?
I think putting in the time and doing the little things. Our coach really talks about doing the little things right and to basically focus on them more than the big things, because you can't have the big moments without the little things happening first. So, for instance, like, I don't want to use an example of me, but it's the only one I can think of right now, but Sid McKinney got a bunt down, and then Addie B got a bunt down, and then that's put them in scoring position, and then when I came around, one of them had already scored, and the next one scored off of my hit. So those two bunts, those two little things that my teammates did, it mattered a lot. So I think harping on the little things, one, is the best way to go around doing anything in life, but two, it counts more than you could ever know.
So we don't celebrate bunts a whole lot, but you're saying they're a really important part of the picture.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Let's talk about the coaching staff. That's something I was going to bring up later, but they have now a long track record of really producing great offensive teams. If you look through the Shocker record book, you know, the hitting records are just dominated by the last 8, 10, 12 years. Take us inside that. How does this coaching staff get the best out of hitters?
I think they do a lot of behind-the-scenes work. They use film to the highest advantage, and they let us in on that stuff as well. And I think that them telling us just, hey, this is what happens with this girl, this is what happens with that girl, when we're watching film, it reminds us when we're in the game of, oh, Coach B or E talked about this during practice. I think that we have a practice plan set in motion for what's going to happen in the upcoming week, and then we try all week to execute what we're trying to do. And I think that preparing in that way has helped us so much, and it just baffles me when I see teams don't do it. And I'm just like my coaches have found the literal gold mine of just, hey, this is a thing we do. And I think film is a lot more important than people give it, and I think that Coach B uses it for like what people do on the field, for the pitchers and for hitting too. But Coach E uses it for hitting a lot, and Coach B usually preps a lot of things for us during practice, and Coach E is part of the other side of prepping for practice, and that is our hitting. I think that they do an awesome job at trying to make everything as game-like as possible, so when you're in that situation, it's 100% more easier than what it could have been if I was on another team, so.
So let's say you're preparing for a weekend series, so you know the two or three or four pitchers that you're most likely to face. Do you spend an hour looking at each? Do you spend a half hour? Give us a little bit of insight into how much time this all takes.
It's all so fast for me because I love the sport and time goes fast when I'm in practice or I'm in a game, but we spend a good amount in practice going over game plans and preparing. So I would say, I don't know what time stamp to put it on, but we pretty much do it every day.
And are you looking for, what are you looking for when you really drill down on what that pitcher is going to be throwing you?
What has she done to other people? And through other people, like, do I see myself doing that? Do I need to watch out for this? What do I need to work on? Like, what are my weaknesses? I think that working on your weaknesses is a big deal. I don't think anybody would dispute that. But for me, especially, like, looking at what other people have done, I'm a visual learner. I'm a very visual learner. I mean, I'm an art major, for crying out loud. So I'm a very visual learner. So having that is very good for me. And I'm pretty sure a lot of my teammates feel the exact same way.
And does it get as specific as, so you're a power hitter, do you look at what she does to a pitcher does against other power hitters, or do you, in a, like, looking at her approaching a slap hitter would not be helpful?
I mean, it can be helpful, because, like, sometimes, like, some teams do have a, like, a sequence where they go in, out, up, they sometimes have a sequence, so just looking for little things like that, and most times they don't, but just, like, because it's usually pitch called from a card, but it's good to know, like, hey, I've seen this on film, and then you see it in a game, you recognize it. I think it's just recognition, no matter who is up on film. I think recognizing the pitches that they throw is out there. So you just got to take what you have known, what you've looked at, and apply it to yourself.
So the Shockers are 43-9, lots of big victories. Is there a game this season that you look back on and say, all right, that was a real... maybe a turning point where I realized we could do some big things?
I think the first time we beat OSU, because a lot of people hype them up. A lot of people, they're a good team. I'm not gonna dispute that. Kenny runs a good team. I'm not gonna start anything with that, because there's nothing to start. He runs a good team, but I think that us beating them really put us on the map, and we really came out firing, and that was the most, like, clicking for me, like, oh crap, we're gonna, heck yeah, like I had every belief and every confidence in the first place, but when it actually happens, you just get excited, and you're like, oh yeah, I knew this was gonna, it's like, I knew this was gonna happen, this is awesome, kind of a thing. So I think that was the game where I got super excited, and just was really happy to be there, and help my team, and just being with my team in that game was pretty awesome.
So conference championships sometimes get overlooked. I think we really rush to get to the NCAA, get to that kind of thing. The Shockers have wrapped up the conference regular season championship with 1 weekend to play. Winning a conference championship, what's that mean to you?
It means that we put in the work. It means that we did what we needed to do, and we worked our butts off all year, and we got to where we needed to be. And I think it's just showing what we've done in and out of the sport on our team, because our team has done outside work, our team has done practice work. It's showing all of it that we've worked to be here, and we have a right and we've earned a spot to be here. So I think it's showing everybody that, hey, we're here and we're not leaving, basically.
So I want to go back and remind people the Oklahoma State game that you referenced. They were ranked number 2 in the country when they came into Wilkins Stadium early April, an 8-7 win for the Shockers. So that was certainly one that really put a lot of things on the table for Wichita State. Lauren, take us through your time here at Wichita State. How do you feel like you've improved, progressed? What's been important for you during your time as a Shocker?
I've improved, I think, mentally, because I didn't realize how much of the game is mental. Like, as a kid, you just came in, you're like, I'm gonna do this, and this is gonna be awesome. And then when you get serious into ball, when you're a kid into summer ball, and you're just like, you have one goal, you want to get to a team in college, you want to play in college, you love the sport so much, you want to do that. And I achieved my goal, and I'm so thankful for the Lord for giving me this opportunity to be here in the first place, because I remember sitting in my kitchen crying, thinking nobody was going to want me, and then Coach B came along and saw me, and she offered me, and I was just ecstatic, and I knew that's where the Lord wanted me to be, and I was just so happy. And then I got here and didn't realize, hey, you need to start being an adult, you need to start doing things on your own, which means you need to eat breakfast, stop not eating breakfast, go eat breakfast, and you need to do laundry on this day and whatever. I had a big wake-up call of reality, because my mom always did my laundry and my mom always did that stuff, so I had a big wake-up call in that way. But in softball, I knew in college, because somebody else told me, I'm pretty sure it was Mackenzie Weber, who used to be on the team, but she moved somewhere else. But she told me, because she was playing on the summer ball team, she told me, you're going to have to realize that every person you're going to be with on this team was the best in their high school, was great on their summer ball team, and you were in that pool too. It's how much work you put in and how much time you are going to put into the sport is what's going to determine what you're going to do here. And she told me this when I was, I think, about the summer before I was going to go into college. So I didn't really know what some of her talk meant until I got here. And when I got here, it was like, oh, crap, I haven't done a day of conditioning in my life. I haven't really taken care of my body in a certain way. Then once that started happening, I started to do that. And Coach B really was telling me, hey, you kind of have to step it up. So I did. I think improving, like, mentally in my work ethic, too. I think I've improved that way a lot. And hitting is... it's way different when you're hitting a summer ball team to a college team. I think it's like that's like a no-brainer, but you don't realize how real it is till you get here. So getting used to the pitching and getting used to trusting myself up at the plate was a really huge thing for me to do. So I think that in total, I've learned basically through trial by fire. Learn what you did wrong and learn and how to improve yourself and do right. Like, I don't even think twice about taking extra cuts. I just do it. Like, I used to not be that way. Now I'm that way. And as soon as I started being that way about a couple years ago, it really turned my hitting around. So I think that just learning from my mistakes was what I did throughout my college career.
So you could solve a big problem for parents all over the world. We've been trying to get our kids to eat breakfast for decades. It never works. What can we do to get our kids to understand the importance of a good breakfast?
A nutritionalist put it to me. It's when you're an athlete, it's kind of like you're a car. You got to put fuel in the car in order for it to start. So breakfast is the fuel that you got to put in order to start. So I usually do a rice cake with peanut butter on it. That's usually what I do. And then it doesn't have to be like this huge, like I'm going to have 9 pancakes and I'm going to have a breakfast burrito. No, just have an apple, have a rice cake with peanut butter on it. And I cook 2 eggs in the morning too. Like just little things again, the little things. So, and then just throughout the day, I know we have snacks in our locker room. So I just eat that. I know kids don't have that. I'm just saying, like, pack a snack once in a while too, a healthy one, not like Doritos or anything. So
no Doritos for breakfast. Lauren Mills says breakfast important. That's good. That's helpful. We parents need that help to get our kids to eat. Okay, so you described reaching a point that a lot of athletes do. You get to college and boom, it's tougher, it's different. And at that point, some people will decide, I don't want to put in the extra work. Maybe academics is more important to me. Maybe I want to transfer to a different school. And all of those things can be, fine, legitimate reasons. You decided to work harder and stick with it. What made you want to do those things to continue to improve?
Well, I think that my mom was a big influence in it. She says, are you going to sit here and whine about it, or are you going to go do something? So my mom has always preached that in my life, is you don't just sit down when you're beat. You have a choice, either cry about it or get back up. So I told my mom it was hard. I told my mom, hey, this is so much harder than I thought it was going to be. And she said, well, are you going to have that mindset also and just think over things hard, or are you going to overcome it? So my mom really helped me in that way to tell me, hey, basically get off your butt and work. Just my mom was a very big influence in my life for that. So she's always been that way, has always done that ever since I was little. I had a guy come around whenever I was playing travel ball, and I remember shaking his hand, and it wasn't really a good handshake. I was about 12 at the time, and I just got on a new team. We're playing really competitive ball. I shake his hand, and it's like one of those limp handshakes that I didn't know you're not supposed to do at 12 years old. And the guy told me, well, next time you ever shake someone's hand, do that, and also give eye contact and speak more clearer. And I want you to know that you have to work, you're gonna have to you're going to have to do a lot more in college. And first things first is that you got to do all this stuff to even communicate with people. Communication is key. And if you can't communicate, I don't think you're going to go to a good school for softball. I remember him saying that to me. We were in Oregon for a tournament. And I remember going to my hotel room and telling, because my mom saw the whole thing. And I remember crying and telling her, like, I don't know, like, what I'm going to do what he's saying is true. What am I going to do? And she goes, well, he told you things. Utilize them. So now I always have a strong handshake. Whenever I'm talking to somebody, I make eye contact. I don't remember what his name was at all. I don't remember the guy's face, but I remember his words. And just, he basically told me, you're going to have to do more. And then when I got to college, I figured out I need to do a lot more. So that's kind of one example of my mom in the past telling me, basically, are you going to cry about it or are you going to get up, basically.
Eye contact, firm handshake. This is more things that parents struggle with. This is turning into a gold mine for struggling parents out there.
I can give you one more. I used to run laps around my house for not telling my dad yes, sir, or no, sir.
Okay.
So, yeah, my dad implemented that when I was very young, and I do that now without even thinking twice about it. It used to be, Lauren, go clean your room. Okay. What'd you just say to me? Oh, yes, sir. Okay, run a lap around the house. That's how it used to be in my house, so... So, yeah, so I guess you don't have to take my dad's parenting side of it. I ran a lot of laps, but yeah, if you want one more parenting advice, I guess that's what my dad and mom did. So
excellent. Well, it seems to have worked out. Was softball always your sport?
I did play volleyball when I was young, and I went through high school, and then I did do powerlifting. And I did do soccer at one point, and I'm so glad I quit it, because I can't play soccer. Just put it that way. I was the goalie. I sat in the goal. Volleyball, I was a middle. I was also ambidextrous in volleyball when I was playing, and that was really fun, because you would think I was hitting with one hand, then I'd hit with the other, and it was super fun to just see their eyes go from one side of their brain to the next, and just like, yeah, that's right, I hit with the opposite hand. So that was the cool thing I did in volleyball. But then I quit because my coach was pregnant the first year, and I thought, oh, okay, maybe she's, like, grouchy because she's pregnant. No, the second year, she treated me like total crap, and I'm just like, I don't really want to play this anymore. And then my teammates in softball are like my family. They're like my sisters. And with volleyball, I did not feel that at all. It was always, everyone's whining and complaining, and no one can get along with each other. Softball, every team I've been on, we've got along with each other. We treat each other like sisters. We're a family. And that's one of the best things I love about softball, is that God gave me this sense of community. But volleyball, I didn't feel that at all. So I'm just like, I don't want to do this anymore, because it just doesn't feel right to me. And so I quit. I left. And it's just like, I'm done with this. But powerlifting was just a thing for me to basically keep being strong. I did it all throughout 8th grade through high school. I went to 2 state tournaments, and I won state twice. So, like, powerlifting was just a way for me to basically keep my muscles up. So that's kind of what I did in high school.
So you had an excellent high school career at Topeka Seaman. You were Gatorade Player of the Year in the state of Kansas as a senior. So I'm intrigued by the idea of you not feeling like you were going to have a place to go play in college. Take us through that a little bit. How did that unfold?
Well, like I said, like, everybody who is in college was the best on their high school team, was one of the best on their travel ball team. And I'm one out of a million girls in this world that wants to play softball. And depending on where you want to go is depending on you, but also depending on what's put in your lap as well. So I think it was just, I saw my friends getting offers, and then I panicked. I think that was mainly me. I don't think it was anybody else but me. So that was kind of where I was at, because I tend to overthink a lot, and I'm trying to let go, because one thing that God has revealed to me is that I need to give control to Him more in my life. I need to stop trying to control every single little thing. And in high school, I did that a lot, and overthinking a lot was one of my main things I did. So I think that was just the case of that, now that I look back on it. I've done that several times, so it's not uncommon for me to do that.
So your patience at the plate, your command of the strike zone has always stood out. It seems like, to my eye this year, people are pitching around you maybe even more than they have in the past. How do you develop that patience, that ability to take walks?
I think you have to realize in the back of your mind is that you need to let go of your ego. And if it's down on the ground, don't try to overswing. Like, let go of, like, you want to hit the ball. You want to hit the ball. You want to do well. But sometimes doing well is just letting go and being on base for your team. Because sometimes it's just that. Because sometimes that is the person who scores.
So if you were talking to a high school senior or junior, I guess, as kids are committing, who is about to take this journey that you've taken, what kind of advice would you give them about navigating the academics, the athletics of playing college softball?
I would say, one, go to a school to where it's a good program for your major. Believe it or not, I wanted to be a welder at one point in my life. I loved welding class. I think I liked it because it wasn't like the other classes where I would sit down, open a book, and just stare at a teacher for half an hour. It was, you're in a shop, you're learning hands-on stuff, it's super fun, you get to build things. And I'd go and take my little dolly I made, little rolling dolly, and show my parents, like, look what I made, and you get to work with spray paint, and it was a cool class. And I was just like, I would love to be one of those welders because it's a good job. But then I realized that welding and softball really don't mix. Then I found graphic design. One of my teachers, Ms. Steinberg, was super nice, and she kind of showed me this world. I'm like, I love this design world, so I kind of just got into that. But for me, like, I switched from welding to graphic design because I didn't know that everything that was, like I didn't pay attention to, like, Coke cans, the way they're designed, or flyers, the way they're designed, or even ads from the Super Bowl, or just everything that you see and or touch that is designed. Like, even like a pad of paper that you use in an office has a header up top to it. That's a design too. Like, you don't realize how much this is in our world. And I realized that, this is a super cool place. I have a lot of, like, passion for it. So I got into that, and I looked at all the schools, and I realized that Wichita State had a really good graphic design program. Jeff Pulaski has a very good handle on the design program here. And so that's the first thing I would say for high schoolers is go to a place where your major is good and go to a place where you actually like the school, because I know a lot of people who do get injured during their time in athletics and volleyball. I told my sister this because she's in a process right now. I'm not going to say which because I don't want to say too much, but I told her, like, hey, most volleyball players have a lot of problems with their legs. So, like, my sister has, I'm not going to say what problems, but she has problems with her legs. So I said, go to a school that you actually like to be there, because if you're injured and you don't like the school, you're going to hate it here, and you're going to be miserable, and you're not going to like it. So I told her, one, find your major that you like with a good school who likes it. Two, find a campus you like. And as much as I love Coach B, she could, some, like, during my recruitment process, some coaches were switching different teams. And I was told by a person who helps girls get into college, don't just go to that school for the coach. I love Coach B. I love her a lot. And I'm happy she stayed for all my 5 years because I love her. I also love Coach E. Funny enough, I actually wanted to go to Pitt State where she was coaching beforehand. And I'm like, I want to go to Pitt State. And then Wichita State offered me. And then I realized, Coach E moved here. That's awesome. So I love my coaches. I love them like their family. I love them to death. But I was told, and I still think this is a good idea, not to go to a school just for the coach. Because I know that Baker softball, a lot of people went to Avila for that coach. And she moved, and a lot of her players moved with her because they liked the coach so much. So that's another piece of advice is just, I would say, love your major and love your school a lot more, and then look at the program of softball within it. I think that's the best way to go around and to guarantee, hey, this is where you are meant to be. This is where God's going to put you. So I think that's a good gauge of what to do.
Hi, this is Rick Muma, president of Wichita State University. Check out the latest episode of the Forward Together podcast. Each episode, I sit down with different guests from Shocker Nation to celebrate the vision and mission of Wichita State University. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Lauren, you've been here since fall of 2018, been here 5 years, as you said. What kind of memories are you holding on to as you kind of start going through the last practices, the last games, those kind of things here at Wichita State?
I think what's going through my mind right now is my teammates. I love them, and they're like my sisters to me, and I'm going to miss them the most out of everything. I'm going to miss my coaches. I'm just going to miss the sport itself. Like, I know I'm going to go and probably coach a team sometime, but just I'm going to be on the other end of it, not playing. So I'm going to miss the sport in its entirety, the bad times, the good times, all of that. I'm going to miss all of it because I've been with them for so long. I've been with these girls for so long. I've been with Coach E and Coach B for so long. I've been with Presley for so long. I've been with all of them for years, and I think I'm not gonna lose touch with them, of course, but just playing the sport in general, I think I'm gonna miss that the most.
After one of the games this season, you were giving a group of young softball players a tour of Wilkins Stadium, and I overheard you telling them about the pride you felt in helping build this program. There are big plans over there for improving the stadium, for improving the area around Wilkins Stadium. Tell us about that.
I think that when you look back at your career and know that you've done good things with your teammates and we've done amazing things, I think that when you see the new stuff that's coming, you can't help but think to yourself, I was put here in order to build this program. This is what the Lord put me here to help out with, not only with the program, but just not only playing, but building the program. So I think that I think a sense of pride is not like to the point where it's going to your head, but just to the point where you're like, wow, I helped do this, and wow, our team helped to do this. So it's just the knowledge that you walked so others could run, kind of knowledge.
So you are well known around Wilkins Stadium for several things. You are one of the biggest movie fans, movie critics in that locker room. There's a lot of pet enthusiasts in that locker room. You have Jerry the Rabbit, who I believe was introduced to the nation last year on ESPN during the NCAA regionals. Let's start with the movies. What are you watching? What's the latest movies you might recommend to the people?
I love animation. I've loved it all my life. I have watched Saturday morning cartoons. I used to watch Dexter's Lab. I used to watch Adventure Time. I still watch Adventure Time. That's not used to. I also used to watch even the most obscured shows like the Snorks. It was all animated shows for kids in Saturday mornings. I used to just watch it without a care, and I just realize it's an art style and form that does not get enough credit, does not get enough attention, because everybody writes it off as kids. Oh, this is kiddish. But yeah, some of it is. I'm like, there's cartoons for kids. That's not anything new. But there's a lot of animated kid movies and a lot of animation in general that, yeah, can appeal to kids, but there's a lot for adults too. And one of the main movies I love right now is Mitchells versus the Machines. It's a movie about this young girl named Katie wanting to go to film school, but her dad is like a nature guy, doesn't really want her to do that because he doesn't think it's profitable. And what happens is that they end up getting in a fight, and he wants to like make it right with her. So he's like, oh, let's do a trip across the United States like we used to do. And so he cancels her ticket, and they all get in the minivan. And of course, the girl's not very happy about it, but you know, she makes memories along the way. And then this is a really weird plot, but this tech guy in the B plot is like trying to make sure, hey, let's like get robots into the home now, but they rebel and they're like, oh, we don't want to do that because, you know, humans have treated technology like crap, so we're going to get rid of all the humans. So everybody gets taken but the Mitchells, and they have to save everybody. That's the whole premise of the movie. If the animation's new, it's really fresh. I like to call it the Disney syndrome, because Disney was at the forefront of animation for a while, but it seems like they don't want to change styles. They don't want to get into what's new. They don't want to do anything than just like everything to a T. And in art, you can't really do that. You got to go balls to the wall, go hard or go home, or people are not going to notice you. Like, DreamWorks has done a great job at that. Have they had a lot of flops? Yeah, they have, but they also have had a lot of good films that everybody enjoys. Like, Prince of Egypt is one of my favorites. It's the last 2D animation. It's done beautifully. It tells the story of Exodus, which is when Moses told the Pharaoh to let God's people go. And then the 10 plagues came, and God delivered the Jews out of Egypt. That's kind of what it's based around. And it's a really good movie. It's really well animated. It's a lot of good songs in there, too. So that's their last 2D animation form. The rest have been 3D, and the rest have been kind of just different variations of styles. Like, I think The Bad Guys was one of their films that they really had a different animation style that they used different lighting in. I think I've never seen lighting used in a way that they've used it. So looking at that, like, just different animation styles, and that's what I'm kind of after when I'm looking at animation is, yes, it's animation is technically for kids, but has a lot of things for adults, and does it really hit the mark with the style and the story and the themes it's trying to tell? Because that's kind of what you need for the movie to work. So I think Mitchells versus the Machines does a really good job of that. So does, this is a really weird one. I didn't really think when I saw the trailer for it, it was going to be a good movie. Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. It's been killing it in the box office, and it's been really doing well with people. A lot of people are recognizing it has a lot of themes that you can relate to. Like, there's certain themes of having a family, belonging, how to deal with death, basically. Like, Puss is down to his last life, because cats have 9 lives, and he has to deal with the fact that most of his lives have been wasted. This is his last one, and he has to cherish it. So it's different. It's different themes, simple themes, put into this weird world, and the animation has just stepped up its game. It uses a combination of slow animation and fast animation. The fast animation is just the normal, them walking around or talking, or, hey, they're going to, I don't know, go walk through a garden or something. And then the next animation is when they're fighting. It's slowed down to certain points to where you can see punches thrown, things being thrown at each other, and it's slowed down to where you can see it. And I kind of appreciate that they worked with different speeds, because I think that's not what anyone has done in the past 10 years, is worked with different speeds in animation. And you can really tell it's a lot better when you do it. So I'm really looking forward to more movies utilizing that. So that's kind of what I love about movies, is that you can notice little things like that. So animation's really huge with me in the movie department, and stop animation the most, because it's usually good, because you have to really go through the process, because it's a frame by frame, let's take pictures in order to make it look like it's moving. So that takes a lot of time. I think it takes maybe 2 days for 30 seconds of them rearranging certain things on the camera to make it work. So 2 days for 30 seconds is a very long process. So you have to make sure it works. But I absolutely adore stop animation.
And Mitchells vs. the Machine was the name of it?
Yeah.
And how do people watch that?
Netflix. It's on Netflix, and we can watch it online with certain providers, but Netflix is the main one. I think Puss in Boots is on HBO Max, I believe. I know it's on Peacock, I think, but I'm not for sure 100%, but yeah, it's coming to streaming platforms. But usually 9 times out of 10 if I'm watching a movie, it's either animation or something like John Wick. I'm really big into action movies. So like John Wick, a good one to watch is Nobody. That's on HBO Max. I think the last good action movie I've seen was Nobody, and that was a couple of years ago. But just like to me, like nowadays, it doesn't really have a lot of passion as it once had. So like having just a fun action movie, it's just fun to watch. I could say the same thing about Marvel and a lot of things. I just think that we're in an era of ideas are starting to slow down, and they really have to rethink what they're doing in movies. So I think that we need to stop with the live action stuff if it's animated, because I've already seen the movie and you're taking things out of the movie that I liked because it's animated. That's my main thing. Like Disney's doing that, and like there's a lot of things where I'm like, oh, you took that out because I liked it, not because I liked it, but you took it out but I liked it. That's what I meant to say. Like you took it out, and the reason why I liked it is because it's animated, not live action. They need to start. I think Disney, I think a lot of people feel this way. They need to start coming up with new ideas, because reusing old ideas from different animated movies you've made in the past shows me that you are running out of ideas and you're just trying to keep making money. It's not about passion of what you're making anymore. It's more of how can I make the quickest dollar? And people are starting to recognize that. And that's my main beef with Disney right now, is that there's nothing new out besides like the Pixar movies. But like to me, like those are also coming down to a T as well. They need to start having a little bit more passion and trying to find original stories instead of just reusing it, because that's not creative, and I think it's quite lazy. So I think they need to start doing more to make better stories and better movies.
I just read an article, I can't remember where it was, about that topic, taking animated movies and making them live action, and it argued that that was not great. And the example I remember was like the, I guess this would be Beauty and the Beast, the talking candlestick character. When it's animated, it's a much friendlier, more vibrant. And then when you make that live action, it just loses something.
Yeah, it does. To me, like I love the Lion King movie, animated one. I loved it because it had great movie. It had great animation. It had great music. It had everything you could have wanted in a movie. It had really good animation, and that was the last time like Disney used 2D animation, so it had really good 2D animation. And I love 2D animation because everybody's trying to go 3D nowadays, but 2D is just as good, and it's really well animated. I love the songs, but when you put animals in a live action, their face muscles don't make clear emotions, and that was my main beef with the new live action one, is that, yeah, it's CGI'd and it's all animals, but there's not enough facial emotion. Like wordless storytelling is also a really good way, and I think I think some stories really profit off of that. So when I'm trying to figure out an emotion of a person or an animal on screen and I can't see it, it really dulls down the movie. That's my one criticism of that movie, is that you didn't really give them emotional faces, which it could have been weird. I don't know what the process was. I can't speak for the animators, but it seems like you didn't put enough emotion into it, and that's why I really wasn't emotionally invested as I was in the animated movie. When I can see emotion, when I can see all that stuff I need to see in order to get into the mood of the movie and the tone of the movie, because the tone of a movie is very important, because if it shifts, you kind of have this like weird jarring feeling inside you. They're like, that you're just like, okay, something's different. And I don't know if I like it or not. And then you figure out if you like it or not at the end of the movie. So, like, I actually watched a movie. It's called No Country Roads for Old Men. I think that's what the movie was. Beginning was slow. I liked how it built it up. In the middle of the cat and mouse chasing was pretty awesome. But then it shifts from, oh, this is really high intensity. We're gonna, like, who's gonna get who kind of thing. And it just cuts to the guy on the floor. At the end, you don't know what happened, you don't know what ensued, or any of it, and it just cut to that, and my tone just, in my mood just jarred. It went from really exciting to complete confusion, then just little, like, disappointment, because that's really lazy way of ending a movie. So it went from that tonal shift, and just that made me not like the movie because of the tone shift. So tone is one thing you have to account for in a movie. So when I see there's no facial construction in the candle or the animals, I can't really get into it as I would the animated movie. So
Jerry the Rabbit, how has Jerry the Rabbit handled all the stardom since he's been on ESPN?
He doesn't know anything. But he's a little mad at me right now. He's on meds right now because he has an eye infection. But it's fine. He's eating and drinking. He's doing all the good stuff. So it's just I was told wrong. I was told 2 to 3 days the first time I treated him for his eye meds, and it should have been 2 to 3 weeks. Rabbits don't show. The thing about rabbits is they don't show any signs that they're in pain because they're prey animals. They're at the bottom of the food chain, so they're not going to show you outwardly unless it's like very physical, like what they're feeling and whatnot. Like there's certain things that they do, like a binky is they jump in the air and they do zoomies around. That means they're super happy and comfortable with you. If they're laying down, that means they're relaxed and they trust you. And if they're in a loaf, that means they're on alert, but they're trying to relax. And they trust you in that certain way, too. And then there's thumping, which is just they use their back legs to just... That's what they do. I got thumped at this morning because I was trying to give him his meds. He was not happy with me. So I recognized that as I was trying to give him his meds. So it's very, like, physical and little, like, cues you have to pick up on rabbits. So when I came into my room one day... And I see he's hunched over in the side of the room, and I crinkle the bag for treats, because treats are usually how I gauge if his stomach is working, because rabbits can get a thing called a GI tract, or GI stasis, which means that they'll die within 24 hours if they don't get food in them. So, so that's a big thing I look out for. So I give him a treat, he runs right up to me, so I'm like, okay, his stomach's working. Then I realize one of his eyes is half shut, and it's red. I'm like, okay, you have an eye infection, we'll take you in the next day. So he's eating and drinking, I recalled every single time he was eating and drinking, and then I took him to the vet in the morning, and that's what he told me, and then I realized throughout the entire time that he wasn't really cured, and he was still living with a little bit of eye pain, so I felt horrible, but also you don't know until... something else happened and something else happened and I saw his eyes were puffy again. So I took him to a different doctor who's his actual doctor. I took him to the emergency because it was Saturday and the actual doctor works from Monday to Friday. So I took him to the doctor on that Wednesday and she said, oh yeah, they told you wrong. So he's been going through that and what you have to do is give him an oral thing, which is just you put him in a little burrito in the towel and then you pull back his fur and to see his mouth and you stick a syringe deep down there to make sure he has it in there. So that's what I've had to do for about a week now. So, and then eye drops. Not just opening his eye and putting eye drops in. But yeah, he fights me every turn on it because he doesn't want to do it. And I don't blame him. So, but that's how Jerry's been. He's happy, but he's getting healthier.
So why a rabbit instead of a dog or a cat?
I've always had I'm a obsession with rabbits. It's a weird thing. Like, as a kid, every kid loves a bunny because it's fluffy and cute and whatever. But then you actually get to know a rabbit after, because let me reiterate this. Rabbits aren't for 5-year-olds to just stare at in a cage. If you plan on getting a rabbit, plan on it being free roamed, plan on it being out of the cage, unless it's at night, unless you don't feel comfortable at night. I worked a thing with Jerry that I should have done with the new rabbit I was trying to get in, but it didn't work out because she was too aggressive. I'd put him in a cage at night, and then I let him out whenever I was awake and whatever, so we'd have that dynamic, and then we moved into full control of you being around me all the time. So it's a step process, and it takes a long time. But be prepared for that. Be prepared for vet bills that are at least $100. If it's 80, that's a good day for me. Whenever I go in and they're like, it's $80. I'm like, heck yeah, $20 I saved. Let's go get gas. But I'm, plan on doing that. Plan on buying pellets. Plan on buying all this other stuff for hay. And plan on training your rabbit to go to the bathroom. Like, he doesn't do it perfectly always, Jerry, but he does it at the point where, like, he's not peeing on things. He's always in his litter box peeing, and that's it. like we're still trying to get not pooping on the floor down, but you know, that's a long process. But be prepared to train a rabbit like that. They're a lot more work than you think they are. So that's the downside, I'm telling you. The upside is, even though they don't show facial emotions, I know I did rag on that with Disney, but even though they don't show facial emotions, they do show outward emotions of happiness. They have personalities once you get to like be around them. They're very fun and caring and kind animals, and every time I'm in my room having a bad day, he always knows that I'm distressed or whatnot, and he always wants to cheer me up, come near me, sit down, snuggle right next to me. He always is right next to me whenever I'm not feeling the greatest. So they're very vibrant animals if you get to take the time and know them. But the thing is, most people don't want to get to take the time and know them, and sometimes ends up with rabbits being in a cage for all their life. And I'm just telling you right now, that's an awful thing for a rabbit. So if you plan on getting a rabbit, don't leave it in a cage, plan on it being free roamed. And even if you don't trust it being free roamed, you can designate a spot in the house that is about, I would say, 5 by 8 feet of a pen, like a little dog pen. Just get like, you can go to Walmart, it's about $50. You can get like this like dog pen crate thing. And I used two, so one was online for 30. Mine was about $80. It was 30 online and 50 at Walmart. So I did this huge pen, and he would run around there and be perfectly fine the rest of the day. Just don't, you're supposed to have an enclosure that's at least 10 times their size, basically. The least 8. So, like, plan on them not being in a cage like that. In a pen, you think you can absolutely do that and merge into something better. But plan on having some work. And also plan on doing a lot of research beforehand. Timothy hay, it's the only hay they need to eat. They love parsley, cilantro. Jerry has eaten broccoli. I'm not sure if he was supposed to or not, so I need to look that up. But romaine lettuce is the only lettuce you can give them, because rabbits, like I told you, is like their stomachs are really sensitive, and anything you feed them that's bad, they will explode from the inside out. So romaine lettuce is the only lettuce you need to feed, because butter lettuce or like iceberg lettuce is going to destroy their stomach. So that's what you need to do. And if you're not sure if they're healthy or not, go to their litter box and check on their poop. That's the only way. It's really gross. I'm not gonna lie, it's gross. But check out their litter box, see what's happening with them, and if it's not normal, take them to the vet. That's a good way to know if your rabbit needs to go to the vet or not. So, like that last part was gross, but the rest of it is perfectly fine. That's the only downside. It's just that stuff. So they're very caring and compassionate animals, and they're very loving animals if you give them a chance. And I think that it's 100% the human's fault if a rabbit has trauma. Like rabbits usually don't get themselves in a lot of mess because they're prey animals. It's usually the humans that do it. So I got Jerry, he was fine, but I tried to adopt another rabbit for him, and I realized that she had a lot of aggressive problems. And my guess is that you put her in a cage, you didn't really give her enough time out of her space, and because of that, she becomes territorial, and when she becomes territorial, she becomes aggressive. So, yeah, I've met an aggressive rabbit before. So I'm not gonna lie, just it's usually humans that mess them up, not anything that they do.
So we've covered advice for parents on breakfast, firm handshakes, good eye contact, care and training of a rabbit. It's been an illuminating podcast. The Shockers, they are 43-9. They are off until May 12th. They will have the weekend off to see how the rest of the conference tournament bracket shapes up. Then they'll be heading to Tampa for that. Lauren Mills, thank you for your time.
No problem.
Great insight as always. Thanks for listening to the Roundhouse Podcast, courtesy of Wichita State University Strategic Communications. We encourage you to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You can always find more Roundhouse content at GoShockers.com.
And they let him pass it up court, and then it gets picked off. A long three by Pangos, no good. 1 second, it's over. It is over, and Wichita State has beaten the number one team in the nation to go to the Sweet 16. Go crazy, Wichita. I know you are.